So I'm going to handpick some people. Who do I want to choose? All right. I was going to actually take Barry, but he's not here right now. Sure. Josh, do you mind coming up for a second here? And Dave, actually, do you mind coming up here for a second? Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to get you, it'll be a little bit of a game we're going to play between you two guys. So one of you, I'll get Josh, you to stand here basically, and Dave, you're going to be beside him, and you guys are going to grab each other's hand, and what you're going to try to do is try to get the other guy's hand to touch your side or your leg or whatever part of you. You can't move your feet, so you can't just do this. I've done it before, and the smart people start to do that right away. But no, the point is to get their hand to touch you. You're going to have about 30 seconds. So before you guys go, how many do you think you're going to get?
None.
None? Dave, what do you think?
How many what?
How many times do you think you're going to get his hand to touch your side?
Probably not many.
Not many. All right. So it'll be my Bobby time of 30 seconds, so I'm not going to actually have a clock. No, you're not. It's just keeping it still. Actually, you guys can move a little bit more apart. There you go. Perfect. All right. Who thinks that Dave is going to get over 3? Hands up. All right. I got some class. What about Josh? You think he's going to get over 3? All right. It's about... Okay, 3, 2, 1, go. All right. Almost. Date. Oh, I'll give you one. Okay, keep going. About 10 more seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, time. Good job. Give him a round of applause. Thank you very much, guys. We're going to do this game once more time, and I'm going to invite my mom to come up with and help me on this. Okay, so the rules of the game is I want to try to get her hand to touch me as many times as possible. And mom, I'm going to ask you to go over there. But before, if you want to turn around, this one. What's that?
That's good. All
right. Okay. But before we start, let's work together. Ready, set, go. Okay, you can take a seat. Obviously, we both already did more. Now, who would have done the exact same thing as Dave and Josh? Hands up. I did it the first time. Yeah, we did it. I've done it with youth groups. I've done it a couple times. And almost everybody we always play with competes. They want to get more than the other person. But the point of the game was not get more than the other person. It was try to get their hand to touch your leg as many times as possible. Because the truth is, though, is that when we work together, we can go a lot farther than when we compete against each other. But in our normal lives, in whatever we're doing, often we're competing, often we're trying to get ahead of other people rather than working together. Whether that's at our jobs, instead of having everybody work together for a common goal, one guy is trying to look better than everybody else so that they can get that next promotion, so that they can get that next job rather than doing what you can to just achieve your goals. It's often true in relationships, too, is that people aren't doing things to have a better relationship and have a better goal. It's to promote yourself. So I'm going to play some mind games so that I have the control in the relationship. I'm going to put them down so that I look better. I'm going to remind them of all the good stuff that I did so that they can do something for me now. We've all probably been part of some good teams, or hopefully you've been part of a good team that achieves a goal together. For me, one of the teams that I was on was my high school football team. And we had a common goal. That year, we wanted to win the BC Football Championship. So we started our year, and we started doing pretty good. Our team wasn't super talented. We had a couple really good players. But most of them were smaller guys. We didn't have a ton of players. At one point, we needed to recruit more players mid-season, even though we were highly ranked, so that we'd have enough guys to practice. In the middle of our season as well, there was a teacher strike. Now, this is a problem because we weren't allowed to practice with our coaches, but some of our main competition were Catholic schools who weren't union, so they could keep on practicing, they could keep playing. And they did during that time, whereas we weren't allowed to practice with their coaches. So some of the captains got together, and we decided we were going to keep on practices going. The captains of the team were going to lead practices. We are going to make some drills. We're going to make sure that we kept on getting better because we had a common goal. And we are going to work together. And during that team, there were certain guys who really disliked other guys, and there were things that happened that made guys wanted to fight and get mad at each other, but the captains kept on pursuing that one goal of the BC Championship. We had the date in our minds, and if you had a problem with a guy, if you wanted to stop talking to a guy, if you wanted to get angry at a guy, you're going to wait till the day after that, because we had a common goal to win the BC Championship. And playoffs come, and the first team we play was a Catholic school who got to continue practicing with their coaches and with their and got to play other teams, and we won. The next game, we played another Catholic school who got to continue practicing, and we played against them, and we won. And I'm not sure, I forget if we had three or four playoff games, but all of them were against Catholic schools. The final game, we played against a team, Vancouver College, who had probably triple the amount of players of us. And I heard one of my friends say that their average lineman was 100 pounds more than our average lineman. That's a big thing in football, because size matters. But yet, we had a common goal. We encourage each other, we support each other, and we were able to achieve that goal because we worked together. We ended up winning that game. It was 7-6 was our final score. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't anyone having a super amazing game, but we did whatever it took to win. We ended up having we got an interception on the 1 yard line from them scoring with like 4 seconds left. It was that close to us losing over and over and over again, but we had that common goal. Hopefully in your life you've had some good teams that have been working together. Maybe that's a sports team like me. Maybe that's a work where everybody's like, okay, we're going to be the best at this as possible. And you're all working together, you're helping each other out, and no one's trying to push themselves above everybody else because you're all just working for a common theme, for a common goal. Maybe you've been part of some really good relationships that do that. And in the relationships, the person's trying to build you up and encourage you as well as you're doing the same for somebody else. And you're pushing each other farther so you can both go farther together, not competing against each other, but working together. Chances are that at times in your life, you've also been missing the team. You might be alone. You might have felt just desperate. Maybe you needed to talk about something you're going through. And you didn't know what to say. You didn't know who to turn to. Maybe in your life you had some doubts or some fears that were just consuming you, but you're scared about what other people would think, so you just kept them to yourself. Maybe there are fears about your job, fears about a relationship. Maybe you had doubts about what was going to happen next, doubts about God and if he's even real or what's going on in your life. And you didn't have anyone to turn to because you didn't know if somebody would judge you. You didn't know if someone would still think of you the same way. And you didn't have anybody to love you. Today we're actually going to talk about church. Now, we had a series a little while ago that was called Don't Just Go to Church, Be the Church. Because a church is really a group of people. And that's where the original Greek, well, the Greek meaning comes from, is a group of people together. And to learn about this church, we're going to look at the book of Acts. Now, the book of Acts was written by a guy named Luke, who was a doctor, really smart, and he went around and interviewed lots of people about what actually happened. Now, he fact-checked, he went back, he interviewed lots of people. I've heard some people today say that Luke, as a historian, is one of the best historians ever. And these are not even Christian people that I've heard say this. It's seculars have said that this is an accurate account of what people said happened. So in this looking at church, we're going to look actually at the very first instance of church and how it worked and how that great team achieving one goal could occur. So in this, Acts 2, 44 to 47, it says, "And all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity. all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. Now, some of you might have gotten a little bit tense there, because usually the thing that sticks out is everybody sold everything they had. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to do that at all today. If God wants to tell you to do that, I won't stop you, but that's not going to be my message. What I'm going to be talking today is that this is a great church. Like, obviously, they're working together. They're accomplishing great things. At the end, you see that people are being added to their numbers daily. They're just having great joy. They're having great fellowship. They're learning lots, and they're going on the journey that God has for them. What's less clear is that in this, there's actually two instances of church. The first is what I'm going to call big church today. They met in the temple to get together, to worship, to learn. Now, there is about 3,000 people at this time. We find out just before this passage in Acts that there's 3,000 people getting together, worshiping God, getting taught from the apostles, learning. But there's also a second instance of church in this, because the people are meeting together in homes to eat together. Now, I don't know if your home can fit 3,000 people to eat, but probably not. And it's also homes plural, so there's multiple. See, this is their small church, that they didn't just get together once and stay in rows and listen and worship together. They got together during the week in homes. This model is actually throughout the Bible. It's throughout the New Testament especially. You see Jesus, and he goes out and he preaches in front of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people throughout his ministry. And then, that's his big church, he goes to small church. He invites his disciples into a group. He starts talking to them. He allows them to ask him questions. He applies specifically into their lives, being like, Peter, you're not very smart. Here's exactly what I meant. And sometimes I need that too. He connects with each person. Paul does it as well. He goes into the synagogues, and he preaches at temples, and he goes to all these places, and he talks to people. But yet, in his writing, he tells people to encourage one another, to spur one another on, to fellowship with one another. They constantly talk in the New Testament about eating with each other. See, there's the big church where he goes and he preaches to them, but there's also the small church that gives people an opportunity to encourage each other, to build one another up, and to build relationships together. Our church actually does this same model. Our big church is here. It may not feel as big as whatever some of the mega churches in the States, but we're getting together to worship together and to learn what God's saying in our lives. We got to do that today, and we do that every Sunday, and we have some amazing preachers. It's exciting for Barry to be coming back to listen to him preach next week. But we also have small church. Each week, we have people meeting in homes to build relationships, to study the Bible, and to apply it to our lives. You see, the fact that we can come here, worship, and learn is fantastic, and I think that's very important, and that model is great to have. But I also see in the New Testament, over and over and over again, that life change typically happens in small church. When you see Jesus going out and preaching to the tens of thousands of people in Acts, I don't hear anybody coming up and saying, in the start of the church, saying, I heard Jesus preach, and now I'm doing this. Or now I believe this. The people that were lives were changed were the people that Jesus had small church with, the ones he connected with. Peter and John changed the world with how them moving around, the other disciples. Even people where Jesus only had one occurrence of small church with, like the Samaritan woman at the well, Jesus met with her, he got right to her heart really quickly, and he changed her life. It wasn't in a big preach. It was an intimate conversation. Because the truth behind this, I believe, is that when we learn something, it doesn't mean we do it. A great example is the Olympics. Who here watched any of the Olympics that just happened a little bit? All right, it's not as many people as I thought. But okay, how many of you people, hands up high. It's okay, you're allowed to watch the Olympics. How many of you watched a sport that you don't know that much about, maybe you've never played, hands up. How many of you, keep your hands up for just a little bit more. How many of you critiqued somebody doing that sport that you have no idea how to do it? Yeah, I don't know if I saw any hands really go down. We don't have to know something, or we don't do stuff that we think we know. I was sitting in a room with lots of my nephews and we were watching diving, and over and over and over again, they critique divers because they over-rotated. Now, none of them, well, they all probably would jump off maybe that high of a board, but none of them could do the flips, the tricks, all those kinds of things. The fact is that they heard one color commenter say once, this guy over-rotated, so there's more of a splash. And then every diver afterwards, they're critiquing, okay, how much did they splash is there? And they'd say it. It's true in our own lives, too, for some more serious stuff. Maybe for you, you probably know you should eat a little bit more healthy or exercise some more. Doesn't mean you do it. For other things, too, maybe we know that we shouldn't get frustrated or angry or even just lash out at somebody when they're being really annoying, or maybe it's a friend or a spouse or a child, but we just can't control it when we know we should. Maybe it's we know that we shouldn't gossip or be negative or say some things that we do, but in the heat of the moment, we still do it. For those of you who are Christians here may know that you should read the Bible more and pray more and commune with God and talk to Him, but it doesn't mean you do it. That's where I believe that small church comes in. Relationships that build each other up so that you can relate. Because we're in rows right now, and rows are really good to hear, to learn, and we can get together and worship God together. But when we're in rows, we can't listen. We can't talk. When you get into a small church, you can get into circles. In circles where you can relate with each other, where you can start to build relationships. Maybe you can share some of your doubts. Maybe you can learn to share some of your struggles. Because chances are that most of you would not want to come up here and share your struggles and what you're going through and the sins you've committed this week in front of everybody at big church. But the Bible talks about share with one another what struggles you're going through. So that's where small church comes in. To allow people to get into your life, to help you, to encourage you, to spur you on, to pray for you, to maybe give you a kick in the butt every once in a while if you need it. Because that's what we need. I mean, in our minds, we don't want people to lecture us over and over and over again. But sometimes, that's what we allow to happen. But we don't allow the life change to occur when we don't get the second half of church. And experience small church. And the circles, the small church, our community groups are a place where we get together and we can build relationships. Because the fact of it is that it's a process. It takes time. It takes getting to learn to trust people. I have a friend who I share lots of my struggles with, even if I feel like I'm being tempted to sin, I'll start talking to him about it. There was a time last year where I was having some just crazy doubts. It was a really difficult time for me. I had some doubts even about God, and I shared with him. And because I had built a previous relationship with him, I gave him the opportunity to encourage me, to pray for me, and to strengthen me. But it takes time. It takes an investment. Because we need to build vulnerability before we need to be vulnerable. We need to build relationships before we need relationships. Because some of you right now may be going through turmoil in your life, you may be going through some really, really difficult things, and you have nobody to turn to. Obviously, the best time to start is now. Some of you maybe going great and things are going awesome for you, but you don't know when you might need that relationship. Because in this text back here, or the text we had, we see Peter and John, and they were in those relationships. They're part of that church. They're building the small church. They're building the big church. Now, soon after, actually, basically the very next story in the Bible, we get to them, and they're going through some struggles. And they are preaching in the temple, and then they get thrown in jail because they're talking about Jesus. Now, the religious leaders did not like Jesus. They killed Jesus just a couple months earlier, and they're preaching in front of them. And they throw them in jail, and then they say, okay, you're not allowed to talk about Jesus anymore, or else you're going to be in big trouble. And the disciples, Peter and John, were like, no, we're going to keep talking about Jesus. And then again, the religious leaders say, you're not allowed to talk about Jesus. Now, I'm sure Peter and John knew they were serious. They just killed Jesus. But the religious leaders didn't know what to do, so they threatened them and then released them. And this is the next verse. In Acts 4:23, it says, As soon as they were freed, Peter and John returned to the other believers and told them what the leading priests and elders had said. As soon as they were freed, they went to their small church. They were glad that they invested, that they built, that they spent time to learn to be vulnerable in that small church. Because as soon as they were freed, they went to them, they were encouraged, they were challenged, and they were released so that Peter and John continued to do it until they died. But they would have been sure glad that they built the relationships before they needed it. Because the truth is that life will rarely take you in the right direction. Whether it's in relationships, and it's really easy to get angry when somebody annoys you or frustrates you. And it's really easy at work to not work hard and be lazy or cut corners even though you know you shouldn't. It's really easy to sit down and watch TV for an extra 2 hours rather than reading your Bible. Or it's really easy to do all these little things that we know we shouldn't do. Life rarely will take you where you should go or where you want to go. It's like salmon trying to swim upstream. It's pushing and pushing and pushing, and you're fighting and fighting and fighting. But smart salmon don't swim on their own. They swim with others. They find the wake of another salmon and go right behind them so that they work together to go upstream. Peter and John, they had some people that they could swim upstream with. They weren't by themselves to try to figure it out. They had people to encourage and build them up. There is different times in life. Maybe we have a wide, deep river that it's slow going and it's easy to move. And you might be in that position right now. But life does have takes an opportunity sometimes to get real thin and real wavy and rocky and fast, so it is really difficult to swim upstream. It's really difficult to swim up the hurdles that we need to jump up. And it is impossible to do it without people beside you helping you. This is where small church comes in. This is where we can build relationships so that they can help us. Because when we meet once a week, it is great to say hi to people, to maybe ask how their week's going, and you may be able to connect with one or two people, but chances are you don't get into the deep stuff. You don't get into your doubts that you're having. You don't get into the fears of what's going to happen at work. And because you can't get into that, people can't encourage you in that. People can't pray for you in that. People can't celebrate when you have big advances. we got to pray for Terry, and we got to celebrate with Kenny on the things that are going on in their lives, but there's probably lots of things in our lives that we can either celebrate or we're going into that we need prayer, and we don't have time for everybody here to do that. In small church, we can. Somebody who I've witnessed that has had a great small church experience, they call it community group at their church, is my sister-in-law. And we were at my sister-in-law's 2 years ago. They live in Texas. And she had a baby while we were there. Now, the day she got out of the hospital for having her baby was 2 days after, the 2 days after she had the baby, the day she got out, they went to their community group. We asked, I was making this message, and I was like, so why did you do that? And I think what she said was just really impactful for me, and I hope it impacts you too. She said, we've always gone to the very next group after each of our babies. We invest so much of our time, emotion, relationship, and prayer into our community group that we consider them all to be like family to us. Our community group has invested so much into the coming of our baby, attending our gender reveal party, throwing a baby shower for us, praying for him, visiting us in the hospital, and making meals for us. We couldn't wait to get back to our group and spend the first bit of group during our social time celebrating his little life and then staying connected into community with them. I wanted them to know how much we valued the friendships and the community we had built with them by making them a priority. Our thinking wasn't, there's no way we can go to group tonight. It was actually, yes, I want to go to group. Our groups over the years have helped us paint the inside and outside of our house, helped clear our property, have helped us move half a dozen times, and done practical jokes on us that have made our lives richer and fuller and deeper than we ever realized would happen going into it. And we're so, so thankful for the investment we made, because as a result, we will never be the same. I'm just going to repeat that last line, and it's going to be behind me as well. They have made our lives richer and fuller and deeper than we ever realized would happen going into it. And we're so, so thankful for the investment we made, because as a result, we will never be the same. Her talking about that immediately reminded me of the Acts 2 church. The church that gave to each other, that met with one each other, that invested in each other, that even sold their property to go and be with them. And for them, it might not be selling their property, but it's selling their time. It's making investments, and their lives will never be the same as a result, because they chose to invest their time in community. Because life is better connected. The problem, though, is often that life's too busy. We can get tired. We have many hobbies. We have many interests. We have many ministry opportunities that we can go to. And they can get in the way. And my sister, she also has those opportunities to do many other things. She has 6 kids that she homeschools. Well, she homeschools 5 of them now. She is part of her middle school program at her church. They are very busy people, but they've realized that when they invest, they can get in return. That the more we sacrifice, the more we can receive. And she chose to prioritize her life around what matters. And she built that kind of community that's like a family. I don't know what's going on in your lives and what priorities you have and what you might give a list to. Mine would be God, family, then work. But I want to challenge you, for whatever your priorities are, to look at your calendar. Is that what your calendar reflects? Is that what your time reflects, those priorities? Because when life gets the rapids of a river pushing you down, will you have the people beside you to help you get through it? To help you swim to create a wake so that you can make it. This week I listened to a podcast, and it was actually the one pastor of a church who 3 years ago, I believe, lost his six-year-old daughter. He was interviewing another pastor who 9 months ago, his pregnant wife was murdered. One thing that the pastor mentioned was that he didn't know how he would make it if he did not have people around him to support him, to help him. He made the investment in time. He made the investment in prayer to build into these relationships so that when life threw just as torrential a tsunami wave at him, he could keep going the way that God wanted him. In your life, do you have that support? Something bad happened. Do you have people you could turn to be encouraged? Do you have people that could help you with physical needs, whether it's moving or whether it's emotional needs where you're going through struggles and you just need to talk about what you're going through? We need to build vulnerability before we need to be vulnerable. In our church, I believe the best opportunity you have to do that is in community groups. So I don't know where each of you are in this spectrum, in this river that is life trying to take us downstream. Maybe you're somebody who is in a group of people that is swimming with you, that is building with you, that you are going together and you have reaped the benefits. And like my sister said, your life has been changed because of the investment you've made. And if you're one of those people, that is awesome, but I want to encourage you to do two things. One, go deeper in relationship. Invest more, build into it more, go with those people. But also, invite other people who may not be in community in to community. Some of you may be in some of those rivers that are just torrents and pushing you, and you are just getting pushed, you're not sure where to go. I want to highly encourage, get in the community group. Get in a group of people that you can build a relationship that push you, that encourage you, that pray for you, that can help you in times of need. Some of you, life may be easy. It might be a wide, deep river right now, and you're swimming, and you're getting promotions, or you're getting, your kids are doing great in school, or you're achieving your goals. And maybe some of the other people might be a little frustrated that I'm even talking about this right now. But for you, I want to encourage again, get in a group now. Not only do you have an opportunity to build relationships for when you need it, but you have an opportunity to even more so help those who need it. Create a wake for others. Because God has called us on this journey together, both big church and small church, both learn and apply. Both worship together and have an opportunity to make relationships, to build together, to change the world. Our vision of this church, like Laura Lee said, is to know and make known the unsurpassable love of Christ. Big church is an amazing experience to learn about the love of Christ. Through the preaching, through the music, through everything we do here, we can learn about the love of Christ. Small church is an opportunity to make known the love of Christ and for others to make known the love of Christ in you, but also for you to learn how to make known the love of Christ in your neighborhood, in your workplace, to apply the love of Christ to your life. I have some stats on relationships and friendships that I found. They're secular places. Some of it was Times Magazine, some of it was others. But a network of friends gives a person less stress, stronger defenses, and live longer. If you have a friend you see on most days, it is the happiness equivalent of an extra $100,000 a year Think about how many promotions you would need to make an extra $100,000 and how much time that would take and how much littler time it would take for you to just start spending time building relationships. Not having a social support network gives a person a higher death risk than obesity and equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Not having a social support network is like basically the health risk of being obese and smoking cigarettes, a pack of cigarettes a day. Friends encourage good habits. They overcome disease. They give satisfaction, pleasure, and happiness. If your best friend eats healthy, you're 5 times more likely to eat healthy yourself. So, with important things like health and diet and all of these things, and I think all of these things are some of the problems that are facing our society today, whether it's obesity or lack of purpose or trying to get more happiness through money and all these things, we can achieve what we're doing through a group of people that care for us, a social network. People that build into us, and we have the opportunity to build into them. So like Laura Lee mentioned, we have these community group sign-up cards that were in your bulletin. And if you're not in a community group, I'd highly recommend you to sign up and try it out. If you sign up, you don't have to stay forever. Come to a couple, start to build a relationship that can change your life. You can put it in this basket at front or even just leave it on your seats and we'll collect them afterwards. Yeah, there's a couple extra here if you don't have a bulletin. Because the greatest achievements that we can do are together. Imagine your life, instead of struggling and not sure who you can call when you need a babysitter or somebody to move something, you have a group of people who have already offered. Imagine if you have struggles and doubts and fears and you're not worried about being judged by somebody, you're excited that you get to share with somebody so that they can help you along. Imagine instead of you're not sure what to do on a Friday night or you're already have a couple people invite you over because they want to build relationships with you to make your life deeper and better. Because you too have an opportunity. And in the words of my sister, you too can be so, so thankful for the investment you make because as a result, you will never be the same. I'm going to pray. God, thank you so much for your love. Thank you so much that you have that you have given us this the opportunity to connect and build together. And as we're about to have communion and experience communion with you, God, we also get to experience communion with each other. And I pray that this grape juice and bread would not be just those things, but it would be a way to experience closer unity with you and with each other. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.